Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today on the show is master counterfeiter turned world-renowned artist, writer, and inventor, Arthur J. Williams, Jr. And Mr. Williams, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And you're certainly welcome. Thanks for your time. So for starters, and a great place to start, tell us about your roots in Chicago to lead things off today.
Well, I'm from the south side of Chicago. I grew up in a borough called Bridgeport. It's like where the Chicago White Sox play, 31st and Halsted. There was a project called ABBA Housing, and you know, it was tough. You know, my pops left us when we were young, so we went from the suburbs of Schaumburg to the projects of Chicago, literally like within 3 months. So, and with Chicago came everything that you hear about: the gangs, the drugs, the violence. I was shot when I was 18. I started printing money when I was young, then got away from it. But yeah, so my neighborhood, it was a lot, you know, if people were to look up Bridgeport, they would see the Chinatown crew, which was a mob. It was mob run, my town. So there was three, you know, gangster neighborhoods in Chicago. One was Ogden, one was Taylor Street, and then mine, Bridgeport. So, so yeah, that's where it all started for me, you know. An old gangster took me under his wing when I was about 15. Showed me the techniques of printing money the old way. And then, you know, unfortunate things happened where he ended up disappearing, and I went back to the streets. So, yeah, Chicago was an interesting place for sure back in the 80s and 90s. A lot of guns on the street, you know.
You know, I've always heard about Chicago in that way. In fact, one time I was in Chicago to see the Braves at the Cubs in early April. I think it was the home opener for the Cubs in 1993. I was advised not to be caught on the south side at all. So you're certainly laying out the truth for us here today. Now, tell us about your recent art exhibit pop-up in Chicago and why it's so important to you and the significance of the location.
So there's a little area in Chicago in Morgan Street where Bridgeport Art Center is actually one of them. If people were to look up Bridgeport Art Center, you'd see this huge art complex. The Zao Brothers is another big artist who built a gallery on 35th Street neighborhood. And where I put my initial gallery, so I've been out of prison 8 years. 5 years ago is when I went professional artist, and it happened at Arnold Schwarzenegger's house. I ended up having an unbelievable evening. Donated about a third of the money to Arnold's charity, and then took the rest and built a gallery in my old neighborhood in Chicago, right on Morgan Street. That was like almost 6 years ago, I guess. And I had that gallery for almost 4 years. It was by appointment only. And the reason I opened it is because all the other galleries that I was trying to get into wouldn't let me in. So I said, okay, I got to open my own. You know, I got to do this on my own. And so I had that gallery for 4 years. And then the pandemic hit, and you know, I had a little bit of money saved, and I had an RV that I traded some art for, right? Because I'm always bartering, man. I've traded art for a Porsche. I've traded art for a watch. I've traded art for an RV. And it was sitting there for like 6 months, and my plan was to paint some stuff on it and then donate it to charity. Well, when the pandemic hit, I told my wife, I said, hey, why don't we jump in the RV and go south to Texas? And I'm going to close the gallery. Well, she couldn't believe that I was going to close the gallery because I put my life into it. But I knew Chicago was going to get rough, and I was right. It did. You know, it did exactly what I thought it was going to do. And so for me now to go back to Chicago, you know, because we left March 13th, 2020. It was Friday the 13th, actually. We rolled out of Chicago in an RV. It was nuts. And so here I am years later going back, and my landlord who had owned the building on Morgan Street, they never filled the space. So I got my old gallery back. And not only do I get it back, but then I get to bring back all the experiences I had in the last, you know, 2.5 years it's been that I've been on the road, you know, because we went from Texas to California. I had two two spaces in LA, one in Beverly Hills, one on Melrose. And so not a, and I learned a lot as an artist in California. There was a lot more access to materials I never had in Chicago, so my art even evolved. And so now I get to go back home into my old neighborhood with my experiences of traveling through this COVID time as an artist. And even my art is reflecting that now. You know, I'm creating pieces to reflect the history of this moment. And that's what, you know, I think that's what the artist is supposed to do, right? So, yeah, that's why it's so important right now. And so, for me anyway, you know, to be able to bring back home some beautiful art from my experience, that's pretty much it, man, you know?
Well, you certainly felt something coming, and really the COVID pandemic in the U.S. started on March 11th, and the significant part about that, the NBA was totally shut down on March 11th that evening, and not even 2 days later, you were heading out of Chicago, so that was a great move on your part for all the reasons you mentioned. Now, if you would paint a picture of what life was like as an artist while in prison versus what it is like now.
Well, I'm free today. You know, prison, I had no freedom, man. You know, it was a fence around you. But I found freedom in prison through painting and through reading and through inventing. You know, I was thrown in a single cell for like 9 months for arguing with the warden at the MCC Chicago, and they shipped me up to Wisconsin. It was crazy. And they put me in a single cell. So that's like walking in your bathroom, locking the door, and don't come out for 9 months. That's what it felt like. And so there were times where at night I would hear people, men crying for their mama. Like you see that in the movies, but that's a real thing. It really happens. Men, for some reason, when they're in stressful situations, cry out to mama. And I seen the deterioration of, I couldn't ever imagine that humanity was treated in such a way in this country. And we were. We were every day. For 9 months I was. And I could have cried out to my mom, or I could have created my own world. And I decided to create my own world in my mind. And that's how my first thing I started on was writing a book called Kane's Dagger. And then, and I was reading biographies. The only thing I was allowed to do was order books from the library. And so I started reading biographies and biographies and biographies. I mean, I read like 80 biographies in those 9 months. I mean, I was just eating up the literature. Before then, I never read, but I was a good reader. So I taught myself in those 9 months. I went into my cave like Da Vinci, which I later learned did, right? And so prison, what's really odd is that 9 months of complete confinement of what you would consider imprisonment freed my mind that allows me to be free today. How about that, right? That's pretty much what happened. That's the comparison, you know? I've been able to find freedom through art now, you know, and it started being confined in prison, the most confined space you could be in. And it's so interesting because I was just telling somebody just recently how prison made me strong enough to handle the things in the world. I just never knew it. You know, I've been to prison 3 times. The recidivism rate is very high. Why is it? Because people don't have faith in themselves that they could be different. But prison, really, if you use it as a time to know yourself and grow, you can take those strong characteristics that maybe you used in the criminal underworld to apply to real life and get through it. And that's, you know, so, yeah, life is a lot different, but it's free. More importantly, just my life is free now, you know. And I found freedom in prison through painting, through writing, and through creating, and through inventing. You know, so those are the comparisons, I think, the best way to say it, you know.
Well, you certainly make things happen within the situation, and that is quite impressive. I got to tell you, today we're joined by master counterfeiter, turned world-renowned artist, writer, and inventor, Arthur J. Williams, Jr., here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, tell us, are you making waves in this digital space called NFT, still unknown to many, by the way? Tell us how you got there and about your upcoming collection.
Yeah, well, I got into it because I'm an artist. You know, I paint, and everyone heard what was going on in NFT. And so I had a gallery in Beverly Hills at the time, and there were a lot of people coming in requesting NFTs, young people mostly. And so I started doing my research and my studying, and this was early in it. And I was unsure like everyone else, and so I somewhat stayed away from it. Now, there were times where I became excited about it because the same way I create my art is the way I created my money. So I was using Photoshop, you know, and when no one knew what Photoshop was, right? So my $100 bill was a hybrid bill because I used the old technology, the printing presses and mixing my own inks, and then I combined it with the new technology, the inkjet lasers and the Photoshop. Photoshop, I would use the serial numbers and the seals, and then the offset technology, I would use the tinting of the paper and the face. And I combined the two, so I created the hybrid bill. I did the same thing with my art. I've created almost 800 digital images in the last 8 years since I've been out of prison. I've only painted like 15, 20% of them. So I had all this content, digital content, that was just sitting there. Really didn't do much with it because in the art world, there's always been this stigma that digital content isn't really art. Now, I never believed that because I've spent hundreds of hours on some of my digital content, right? But in the art world, unless it was painted, people didn't get it. So the NFT allowed me to say, wow, I got a lot of digital work that I could enter into this world. To me, that's valuable. Now I could find people that will think it's valuable also. So that's kind of the first step, you know. Then I hooked up with some really good people. The Terra Luna people came in. I talked with them. I got a great agency that I'm working with that helps me, guides me through this whole process. So I have a good team. That's the first thing I say. I have a great team around me that's helped me understand the NFT market a lot better. And now I'm creating fascinating things, animated NFTs. It's even caused my art to evolve. Again, another evolution, right? So the NFT caused me as an oil painter, digital creator, to now start looking at a market that I never considered before, you know? And I'm really excited about it in the sense that, because I follow it really well. I've even spoke at conferences on it. I see how crypto is going. I see how NFT is going. The reason why I'm excited about NFT is that it has an IP behind it, whereas crypto, people are still unsure what is really giving crypto value. I don't really know yet. I've been with some of the best crypto people, sat down, and it's basically data-driven, right? It gives an equation, you know, then it starts to work into this community, and then it becomes valuable. Well, there's still nothing really backing it, right? There's no gold. There's no GDP. There's nothing that allows the crypto to have a backing at this point, except user, right? The users, the community that's using it. So NFT, though, what I like about it, and the reason I believe it'll stick around, is because it's IP-backed. So my intellectual property, which is my digital assets, which is my creations, are valuable to me. And now they can be valuable in that world and retain value in that world. And there's a lot of questions that are going to be asked. Like, I just seen how Meta Birkin was sued for doing a Birkin bag NFT. And people have asked me this question, like, because I do some pop art, Marilyn Monroe, Frank Sinatra, different actors, singers. I'm doing Rolling Stones right now and Pink Floyd. And so the question now is, you know, what is the copyright infringement now? Like, before, artists could paint famous people. Everyone did it. From Da Vinci painting the Medicis, who were famous, to Warhol doing Marilyn Monroe, to me, all artists have done the characters of the time. And I don't know if that's going to be able to transfer over into the NFT world unless you get the rights from them, right? And so it's going to change the art game quite a bit, but then it allows people like me who create unique images that are standalone to find value in that world and to back it with the IP, the intellectual property rights of that backing, rather than just the crypto where it's still unsure where the value is. So that's why I'm excited about the NFTs.
And speaking of NFTs, Dollabyte NFT is your first official NFT collection that officially launched last month. Now, these 10,240 unique NFTs are launching on the Ethereum and Terra blockchain. Tell us about this collection.
So the Dollabyte is a concept that is, again, backed by my intellectual property, by my art. And what's cool about it is it's basically the dollar in bytes. So you have bit and coin. And so when I was challenged, basically, to create a digital $100 bill that didn't reflect the $100 bill, that was a big challenge for me, because the 100 is all I ever knew, right? That's the only thing I ever created, even in my art. So now here I am being challenged to create a $100 bill that doesn't reflect the U.S. currency in any way. And wow, what a tough one that was for me. And then it all came together just by listening to a song. I was listening to an old 80s song, and I came up with, I combined dollar and then byte, which is, the byte is the key for most wallets, right? That uses bytes, a byte technology for you to have your secure keys. And so that's when I came up with dollar and byte, dolabyte. That's what it stands for. And what I'm excited about it is that I'm getting into metaverse technology, to where I'm creating a gallery within the metaverse. I'm creating themes from some of my past art. I'm doing a circus that you can attend. I'm doing games, presidential heist. I'm doing a Kane's Dagger game, a book I wrote, 700 pages that I wrote in prison. So I'm creating, literally, because I've been into this digital concept since I've been out of prison, because of my past, I'm creating whole worlds now. The dolabyte will be the financial obligation that's allowed to run through my world I created. So it's so amazing, right? I mean, that's why I'm excited about the dolabyte. And then all my art, like, I'm creating art. I just combined physical and digital. It's something new. Where the physical piece of art, you hold your phone up to it and it takes you to a digital video that you can actually buy an NFT off the physical art. So I'm doing a lot of new things with my physical too. And it's all been, it's all going to be funneled into the dolabyte, right? Again, to give the dolabyte some sort of intellectual property backing, right? And I think with the way that I've handled my physical art, being very stingy with it, it's hard to get it. I don't sell it online. I made people come to my gallery to buy it. It was mostly always personal interaction that I sold my art. And by being careful with the physical art, I'm applying that to the digital world too. So everything will be in accordance with one another. So the dolabyte will be backed by the intellectual property of my visual art, that will allow you to work within the metaverse of the world that I create, whether it's a circus or a gallery or a presidential heist game. So the dolabyte will be the instrument that allows you to roam in my world that I create. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in like the next 5 years.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And you certainly do have a lot going on. I hand that to you for sure. Now, also, we know giving back is very important to you, and it is what makes up your DNA. What charities have you or are you working with, and why is this important to you as well?
Well, for me, right now I'm working with Maestro Cares. It's Mark Anthony's charity. I'm working with After School All-Stars. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger's charity. It's an after school program charity. I've done things with Common Ground out of Chicago, with Common. And so for me, the charities, so even when I was spending money across the country, you know, when I was taking those hundreds and cracking them, we only bought kids stuff. And then we'd drop it off at the Salvation Army. Because like I said in the beginning of this interview, when my father left, we were homeless for 3 months and then put in the power. Well, we were at the Salvation Army on Sheridan Avenue. So when we were spending money across the country and breaking these hundreds, it got to the point where we couldn't buy ourselves anything more, and we couldn't buy people that were around us things. And so we started buying things for kids, and it became addicting. And especially knowing where I came from, such poor, you know, impoverished, you know, growing up, it was just really tough. You know, we went without water for without gas, hot water for 2 years, you know, in the projects. That's sad. In America, 2 years, when I was 13 to 15, we had no hot water, you know, and there's kids out there that are living like that. So for me, charity, giving back is like, it's, I believe that if more in the world were to look at the person next to them and wonder if they needed something and help them, how different the world would be today, you know? And so I hope that through my art and through my message and through my life and actions, that people will start to truly be inspired to help others next to them, and not only look for the bad, You know, right now the country has been in a state of where everyone's looking at the negative in everyone and not looking at the positive. I've traveled around this country 13,000 miles. I just did a big trip, right? And I got to see the whole country. And it's a good country, man. There's some good people from everywhere. And people need to know that. So for me, the charity is huge in the sense that it allows me to still help those who need it through my art, right? And it's money art on top of it. So it's, it's been an amazing thing. And I hope that it'll spread, right? That people will be inspired through the giving and really get this country, you know, caring for one another again. I guess it's the best I could say it, you know.
Mr. Williams, we certainly appreciate the time spent with us here today. And no matter what you've gone through, the errors you've made in this life, you certainly have made the best of it. And it certainly is an inspiration as well. No matter what situation you're in, you can certainly turn that around. And we certainly wish you all the best looking ahead. Tell our listeners where they can get all the details on all the things we've mentioned here today and in touch with you as well.
Right now, it's on my Instagram, Arthur J. Williams Jr. I have a website, ArthurJWilliamsJr.com. And those are, you know, Facebook, same thing, Arthur J. Williams Jr. Use my name for everything, you know. So pretty much just type my name in and it'll lead you somewhere, you know. And, yeah, so I got some cool things going on right now. It's going to be interesting this next year, you know. So, yeah.
And, of course, we'll leave those links within the show notes of this broadcast as well. Mr. Williams, all the best, and thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
All right, thank you so much. Have a good day.
And you as well. We've been speaking with master counterfeiter turned world-renowned artist, writer, and inventor, Arthur J. Williams, Jr. And for all the details, simply visit ArthurWilliamsJr.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.